You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for coming and joining us on the show. Not coming to the show. I wish we could do a live show, Tim. That'd be fun. But thank you for joining us. We appreciate the listen. I hope everybody's having a good week. It's a nice Friday. We finally got Tim back in the mix. Tim back from his vacation or work vacation, however you want to call it. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Yeah, no, not a vacation, but still a lot of fun. You know what's tough, though? I got my flight yesterday. I was in Chattanooga, Tennessee for work for a couple of days visiting a client. Cool little city, by the way. Kind of surprised me. Flight was supposed to be at 12:45, and I got there early, like a really early. I got there like 10:30 just because I was like, I want to just do a couple of things for work. I don't want to be rushing. And so I was planning on checking in at the gate and then just like putting in an hour or so of work. Flight gets pushed back to 1:15. No big deal. Gets pushed back to 1:45. So now we're an hour late. It kept getting pushed back. We didn't leave till 5:30, but it was a half hour at a time every time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You which can't is the leave worst. The gate.
Right. If I know, like, okay, it's 4 hours late, then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go nestle up somewhere and get cozy. It's like, no. And I didn't get any work done because I kept thinking I was taking off, you know, at any point. And the whole day went by, which was really annoying. But
You probably would have got yourself a haircut if you would have known. Had a little time, got a little trim. Those airport haircutters are pretty good. That's the worst.
That's the worst. I have an appointment tomorrow, though, for a haircut.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
I was going to say, we got a message from a fan of the show, Owen Aiken. He got a good laugh at your haircut scenario. So shout out to Owen. The fans love your hair. They love your hair. I don't know what it is. It's when you got it, you flaunt it and you take care of it, I guess. I actually went out and got a haircut after that episode because I just felt like I was inadequate. Even though no one can see us, I just felt bad. Like, I got to step up my game. If Tim's getting what, 4 a year, 5, 6 a year,
7? 6. Yeah, 6 to 7 a year, probably.
Dang, I was ripping along at 2, maybe 3. So I got to step my game up. So I dropped $25, I dug into my piggy bank and I got a haircut. And look at me now. I look just as bad as I did before.
You can't even tell.
So, exactly. You know, who cares? No one cares about me. You know who does have a good head of hair and who really cares a lot about their looks is Doug Wilson, former GM of the San Jose Sharks.
Still current.
Well, for another end couple of the weeks.
Year. Yeah.
Do you like that early retirement call saying I'm going to retire at the end of the year? Does he think he's going to go on like a retirement tour and get the accolades on the road? Or is he just, I don't understand that move as a GM. That's a strange thing. Give the owner a heads up, put it out there in the press. I don't get that move from Doug Wilson, but Dougie's a very unconventional guy for a GM. Most GMs who I've played for, I think they all have one reoccurring theme where they just don't care about their looks. They're disheveled. They, you know, are just gristly, old, grumpy guys. That's the theme of GMs. And you look around the league, it holds true to that. There's a couple guys, younger guys, I guess Dubas is a younger hip guy. Maybe he, you know, looks in the mirror before he leaves the house. But all in all, Mark Bergevin definitely looked in the mirror before he left the house. All in all, though, most of the GMs are just grumpy old men. And Doug Wilson was a guy, obviously played for him in San Jose. He scouted me per se. He came after me a little bit when I was a free agent. And my initial kind of reaction to Doug Wilson was, dang, man, you got the whitest teeth I've ever seen. And he's just tanned and put together and just looks like a Hollywood movie star. He looks like an old 70s movie star who is just never has a hair out of place. And he was a good GM, a sneaky good GM. He put San Jose on the map for over a decade, close to two decades. He made that team competitive. Sadly, they didn't win a cup, but it wasn't for lack of trying. He brought in a ton of talent, kept restocking the shelves. He drew the first marquee free agent to San Jose, or not free agent, but Joe Thornton was the first big guy to come to San Jose. Then it became a destination. And you saw guys wanting to come to San Jose. The the Boyles, the other guys. I don't have a list in front of me, but he made San Jose a destination. They knew you could compete for a Stanley Cup. He went to, I don't know how many straight playoffs. So I think he went 14 out of 19 years. They obviously made the Stanley Cup in 2016 and lost in a heartbreaker. But yeah, he had a good run. A couple President's Trophies, I think, conference titles, division titles, blah, blah, blah. Never got over that hump with the Cup, but yeah. All in all, I think one of the more successful runs for a GM, I think Poile in Nashville is the only other guy who can say they've been with one team for that long in this era. So good for Doug Wilson. I think he's retiring for health reasons. You know, he's had to step away from the team this year, and the assistant GM took over. So who knows what is going on with him. Hopefully you can get that sorted out. But, you know, I had nothing but good things to think of when I heard of Doug Wilson's name. He gave me a shot in San Jose. I had career high in goals. Like, I was just playing out of this world. The only reason I didn't resign wasn't because of Doug Wilson. It was Pete DeBoer didn't want to resign me for whatever reason. I don't understand. He didn't want to win the Stanley Cup. I get it. But yeah, Doug Wilson, good for him. Congrats, man.
I think it's a good one. And hopefully the Sharks fans are listening feel the same way. And I would love to hear what people think of Doug Wilson in San Jose in the Bay Area. But I think it's very much tied. It's similar to Joe Thornton, right? You're in the same city for a long time, standard of excellence, you know, the lead in the league and all these different things and really strong production. Never got over the Cup. But that's not to say they didn't have playoff success. This team won a lot of series, has won on a couple deep runs, like you said. No, it's hard to win the Stanley Cup. And maybe a little bit you take a hit for not getting over that hump, especially having so many good players for so long. But this is not like a failed tenure. This is nothing to hang your head on. He's had a good run, and hopefully a strong, lasting legacy there in San Jose.
Yeah, what is he better known for? A player? He was an all-star player, went into the Hall of Fame in 2020. Or is he known as a GM? And when you think of Doug Wilson, you're obviously a younger kid. You probably don't realize Doug Wilson played in the NHL for over a decade. His rookie year was 77-78. And I think he actually finished up with the Sharks in 92-93. Then 10 years after his last game with the San Jose Sharks, he's the GM of the team. So what is he known more as? A defenseman in the NHL or a GM in the NHL? Because he put up some decent stats. He got almost a point per game defenseman when he was in the NHL. So what do you think? Is he a GM or is he a defenseman? What do you think of when you think of Doug Wilson? You probably think of him as a GM, I would imagine.
I didn't even know that he was a player until he got inducted to the Hall of Fame. And I was like, oh, good for him. So yeah,
he's getting inducted as a GM. No, he was a heck of a player. I think that gets overshadowed by his GM work because he was a heck of a GM. But yeah, he had a very good hockey career. Good for Doug Wilson. Moving on. You saw an interesting fact, Tim. I'll let you take the reins on this one. That I was surprised when you told me this stat.
Yeah, I saw this tweet on Twitter over the course of the last couple of days, and the Oilers. And so it was tied at this point. This was yesterday or the day before. The Oilers tied with the Bruins for the most points in the league since the beginning of February 11th. And they passed the Bruins last night with a win over the Kings, a big huge win by them. This is the legit streak. We haven't really talked much about the Oilers except for bashing them. And we know that they can win some regular season games. That's never really been an issue for them, for this core. Is this impressive? Are you changing your mind a little bit on them based on this? They've been the strongest team in the league over the last 6-7 weeks.
What did I tell you 6-7 weeks ago? What did I tell you?
You told me they were going to win a bunch of games. They had an easy schedule. They were going to string together a ton of wins, and people were going to think they had a shot until they ran into a real playoff team and get punched in the mouth.
What's happening right now? They were a big, big win in their last 28 games, are 19-9. Best team in the NHL, the hottest team in the NHL. You want to know? I did a little background myself. Over that time frame, they've played 14 teams who are currently not in the playoffs. So 14 of the 38, so roughly half, or exactly half, have been non-playoff teams. How many of those games do you think they won of the 14 games versus non-playoff teams?
10.
12-2.
Wow.
12-2. The other 14 games versus playoff teams, what do you think their record is?
6-8.
500, 7-7.
Seven and
now
seven.
Let's dig into those 7 wins a little bit. two of those wins versus overtime, St. Louis Blues, Washington Capitals, two fringe playoff teams, Washington Capitals, St. Louis Blues. That's fine. Overtime games, back-to-backs, maybe not the strongest team you're going up against in St. Louis and Washington. Caveats. Big asterisks on this next one. They play the LA Kings three times. I've said it time and time and again. The Pacific Division is hot garbage, except for the Calgary Flames. There's no one good in that division. So when you play the LA Kings, they're a good team. They're young. They have some vets. They have a lot of positives. They beat the LA Kings three times. So of those seven wins, five of them are just, whatever. They had a good win versus Tampa Bay and a good win versus Florida. Other than those, this is a huge mirage. This is a huge mirage of a win streak. I don't buy into it. I think all these other talking heads, all these people at Edmonton and Toronto, they're all fired up because they want Edmonton to do good. They will get by the first round because right now they're lining up to play the LA Kings. That is such a saving face for this team. If they were playing any other team in the Western Conference, if they were playing any other team in the Eastern Conference, they would lose in the first round. If they're playing Calgary, St. Louis, Minnesota, Colorado, Nashville, or Dallas, I would pick against them in the first round. The fact that they get to line up against LA, who they match up nicely against, and LA has had a sweet season. It's been a really cute season for the LA Kings. They have no business being in a playoff spot, but the only reason that we're here is because the Pacific Division, the Vegas Golden Knights have had a dumper of a season. The Vancouver Canucks have started off so incredibly slow and they've tried to claw their way back, but they're not going to make it. Anaheim sucks. San Jose sucks. Seattle sucks. Arizona sucks. All these teams are terrible. So Los Angeles just gets like, oh, I guess I'm here. I'll take that third spot. That's why. That's the only reason why they're in the playoffs. And Edmonton has fumbled their way into a playoff spot when they should have taken this division and ran with it months ago. And they've just fallen in the crap house and come out smelling like roses. And they get to play the LA Kings first round. And they will win that matchup in five games. Then they're going to face a real team in the second round. And they're going to get their absolute doors beaten off. It's going to be pathetic. They're going to lose four straight. And everyone's going to go, holy moly, I didn't realize they were that bad of a team. But look at their record. They've played garbage teams the last 2 months. When they do play a good team, they lose. More often than not, LA is not a good hockey team right now as it stands. They're competitive, yes. They're not a good hockey team when you match them up against the top teams in the NHL. They're not. So when you look through this 19-9 record, when you see through all the junk and all the garbage teams they're beating, they're not that good. You take away the LA Kings win, you're left with a record of just junk versus winning teams. You're 4-7, you're 12-2 versus dumpy teams. I don't buy it. I've never bought it. Maybe this gives these guys a little bit of confidence. Who cares? They're going to lose in the second round of the playoffs. It's good for them. They're finally going to get a win in the playoffs. Connor McDavid can take that little teeny tiny monkey off his back of not winning a playoff series. And just don't worry about the massive gorilla of not doing anything in the playoffs or winning a Stanley Cup. That's not there because you're going to win one round of the playoffs. Congratulations. All the guys at the Nation Network can just have a party and pop some champagne. We want a playoff round. The Oilers are still a long way from being a very competitive hockey team in the NHL. So I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. You can, you know, say what you want about the hottest team since January 11th. Doesn't mean anything. They've played bad teams. They've taken advantage. And mind you, good for them. They've taken advantage of a bad schedule. They're beating the teams that they should beat. But I don't buy it, Tim. I am not drinking the Kool-Aid yet on the Edmonton Oilers. Their goaltending is still suspect. Their defense is still suspect. They've improved their depth a little bit, but not by much. They're not a good hockey team, Tim. Don't buy into it. Don't you dare.
I don't think you're wrong. I do think you're underestimating the Kings. I think those wins against the Kings are impressive.
No.
And wait, and listen, though. I actually am not sure that I picked the Oilers over the Kings in a seven-round series. I think I might like the Kings in that matchup.
Why do you say that, even though they've gone 3-0 in the last month and a half versus the Kings?
Playoffs is a different animal. I like the defense better of the Kings. I like the depth of their scoring better than the Kings. Like we talk about canceling out the top two lines, and you can't completely do that with McDavid and Draisaitl. I get it, but like the Kings' stats, like they're spread across so many players. You can't cancel out one line. Even if you shut down their first line, their second line, you're gonna have to face like an Arvidsson, a Trevor Moore, Eiafalo, Dustin Brown. Like these guys they're deep. They're deep, and they have the secondary scoring. They have a better defense than the Oilers. I think they have a better goaltender. He's not elite anymore, Johnny Quick. But you're not going to win many playoff games with Koskinen or Mike Smith in that. I'm not there yet. We have to think about the actual – I got to do more digging before we do our playoff matchup predictions. But I think the Kings might win that one.
LA is probably one of the few teams where I would say their defense is, it's a wash. Neither of these teams have that good of a decor. You know, it's lacking on both sides. Obviously, Drew Doughty's on IR. We'll see where he stands come playoff time. But yeah, you're not going to mistake these teams for the Tampa Bay Lightning of the league when it comes to their back end. These guys are strong up front. I like LA's first two lines, but gosh, I just don't see it. When it comes down to brass tacks, I think the Oilers overpower them with offensive strength. They can't match up with their top two lines. Even when you have a third line with RNH, I like the Oilers in this matchup.
Don't forget, though, you're going to have one of the best shutdown centers in the league hounding McDavid all series and Philip Deneau. And then you got Kopitar, who's one of the elite two-way centers as well, playing against those top six. This is not an easy matchup for them if it is indeed the first round.
It will be a first-round matchup, and I think they win it in five. Well, you know, we'll talk about that when we start doing our playoff breakdowns, Tim. This will be a first-round matchup. There's no way it won't be. These teams are locked in 2 and 3. Calgary's firmly locked in at 1. And there's no way the Vegas Golden Knights are going to, A, make the playoffs, and B, are going to be able to catch these two teams, because Vegas, they just keep getting in their own way. And let's touch on that right now. Vegas had a nice little win streak going. They were getting the good feely-mealies. The mojo was flowing. Then all of a sudden they go and they play the Vancouver Canucks and they lay an absolute egg to end their playoff chances. They lose 5-1 versus the team that is chasing them. So it was a 4-point game. And I tell you what, I've been hearing rumors in Vegas that Jack Eichel might not be working out well with that group. Maybe there's a little bit of issues going on. Maybe they resent him a little bit. Maybe they wish he wasn't there. Maybe he is ruining the kind of chemistry that they had in Las Vegas, because when you thought of Vegas the last few years, the main thing that came to mind was these guys have a chip on their shoulder. They have something to prove. And when you looked at that team, you had Fleury, you had Reeves, you had Stone, you had Marchessault, you had Pacioretty. All these guys got along well because they had something to prove, and they just gelled. There was a team chemistry there that not a lot of teams have. And that carried them their first year, their second year, their third year. They had a lot of success. All of a sudden, guys are injured. They're out of the lineup. You bring in Jack Eichel. There's a lot of press surrounding him. It's not working out. Maybe Jack's pressing it a little bit. He's gripping the stick a little too tight. Maybe he's not passing or, you know, playing good team hockey. Maybe he's trying to get his individual stats up so he can say, hey, you know what? I'm a good hockey player. This trade is lopsided for Vegas like I thought it would be. I'm getting some senses that's from animosity. It's not working out right now. We'll follow this, but this 5-1 loss to Vancouver, pair that with Jack Eichel maybe not gelling as well as he thought he would with the team, and you know it's not working out. This could be the downfall of Vegas Golden Knights, the fun loving team that we know it. I don't know if they come back from this. If these rumors are true, if what I hear is true, this will be a tough pill to swallow. And I don't know what's going to happen next year. They still have to wrestle with the salary cap. It's only going up $1 million. So they got to figure out how to make this work. They are still, I think, $10, $15 million over the salary cap when you look at all the numbers, if everybody's healthy. I don't know, Tim. I think this was a massive swing for Kelly McCrimmon. He went out on the ledge to try to make this trade. And he is, so far, it's not looking good. It's not looking good at all. When you can't play your team because you're way over the salary cap, the guy you brought in to be the savior, the guy who's going to push you over the edge, and it's not working out, and he's already causing a rift within the team, allegedly. I don't know. Maybe all those years it wasn't Buffalo that was the problem. Maybe it was Jack Eichel. Because look at the Sabres now. They're competitive every single night. They played the Carolina Hurricanes almost to overtime last night. And if they had a few more bounces, they would have won that game. And you could say that about the Sabres every single game in the last month. They've been in every single game. They've been one goal games and they've been competitive. And I like the way they played. So I'm just saying Jack Eichel's a good player, but sometimes maybe you got a bad attitude. Maybe it's Jack. I don't know, Tim.
So Vegas right now is one spot out of that last wild card place. Dallas is 2 points ahead of them. Dallas has two games in hand, so it's still very much their spot to lose. But it's getting close, and I'm wondering if Vegas somehow does manage to get in that spot and squeak into the playoffs to the number 8 seed. Do you like their chances on winning a couple series? Is it a different even with those players coming back, the salary cap doesn't matter. You know, you still think they're not a threat?
Well, I still think they're not, even with all those players, they're not a threat to Colorado. It would be a fun series. Don't get me wrong. I don't think Colorado wants to match up with Vegas. They'd much rather see Dallas come through the door on the first day of the playoffs. But even if it is Vegas, I still think it's an uphill climb. Colorado's a juggernaut. They're a great team. Daryl Sutter, he said it a couple of weeks ago where he said, I don't want to be, you know, that team matching up with Colorado first round. You might as well book your flight. Like, it's over. So I don't think Vegas makes the playoffs. They had a huge game versus Vancouver Canucks, like a pivotal game. That's a big game. You have to win those games, and they just lay over. Pete DeBoer ripped into him. He's like, I don't know what that was. All aspects of our game, we failed. Power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5. We were just a terrible team. And when it is a make or break hockey game for you, like, they need every single point. And you just lay an egg like that, and you don't have any pushback, and there's nothing there. Like, there's something wrong with your team. There's something fundamentally wrong with your team if you can show up to a game that important and just lay an egg like that. So I think it's Jack Eichel. I think they thought they were getting a player who was a leader, who was this, who was that, who was just had a tough circumstance in Buffalo. It was going to be a Ryan O'Reilly situation where he leaves Buffalo and all of a sudden he's just like this amazing leader and is going to win all these individual awards and take him to a Stanley Cup. I don't think it is. What a tarnished reputation. How fast his reputation has turned, don't you think? From like five, six months ago until now, everybody hates him now. Everybody used to love Vegas. Now everybody hates Vegas. And it's because of Eichel. Isn't that funny?
Do they hate him because you're contributing to that, though? I mean, I don't know that people are paying that much attention where you're like, oh, wait, John makes some good points here. Maybe he is the problem. I hadn't thought of that.
I don't think I hold that much sway over people's lives, but maybe I do. But I honestly think, like, he made it messy coming out of Buffalo, ruined his reputation. He goes to Vegas. They don't win. I think maybe he's not leaving a friendly mark in Vegas as it stands right now. And that's ruining his reputation. And people are starting to question things. I used to love going for rooting for Vegas, even though I was a San Jose fan. I'm like, yeah, it's a good story. Now I don't want Vegas to win. Now they're, yeah. Anyways, moving on, Tim, what are we talking about now?
How about that Leafs game? Did you catch any of that, the overtime game?
Yeah, the Leafs are good. The Leafs are a very good hockey team. I want to touch on Dallas and why they're in the position they are, but let's stay on the Leafs. Good win for them, correct? Auston Matthews sets a record for the Leafs, which we'll touch on that in a second. That's an amazing thing. The thing that I took out of this game, why can't the Leafs hold a lead? Why can't they? It seems like throughout the years, this has been a common theme with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They start out okay, and they have an amazing second period. They go into the third period with the lead. And then they just crash. And I know they did it versus Florida in epic, epic fashion when they lose a 4 or 5 goal lead, lose in overtime. You have a 3-2 lead over the Dallas Stars with 2.5 minutes left. You need to win that hockey game. That needs to be a win. Like, you need to be able to lock down their first line, lock down their second line, lock down everybody. And this is a problem for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're smiling, you're fidgeting. I know you don't agree with me, but this is, they've done it year in and year out in the playoffs. Obviously the big one versus the Bruins a few years ago when they're up 4-1 in the third period, even Lucic does a little LOL when the NHL says some kind of message on Instagram saying, yeah, Toronto blows another league. Lucic digs the knife in the back a little bit and twists it. Why can't they hold the lead? What is their deal? They bring in Giordano for this reason. He's a proven veteran. You can put him out there. You can trust him. Rightfully so. It was a world-class tip by Joe Pavelski on an absolute rocket of a slap shot that was going wide by Ryan Suter. Pavelski somehow finds it, gets a stick on it, and redirects it into the net. They shouldn't even be in that position. I don't understand how they can't hold a lead. Is this going to be their Achilles heel going into the playoffs? Because, boy, oh boy, if you give Tampa Bay a lead in the third period with 5 minutes left, that game's over. Like, there's no way you're going to get a grade A chance, let alone tie the game. Like, Tampa Bay is so incredibly good when it comes to that situation. Is this a problem? Is it not, Tim?
It is a problem. And I don't know that, like, the it's a playoff. Like, what happened in that game, Matthews, in that 3-on-3 overtime? Beautiful goal that he burns the defenseman on. And Suter actually looked kind of like a pylon out there. Barry's a beautiful goal. Matthews sets the record. Wonderful. You're not getting a 3-on-3 in overtime in the playoffs, right? And like that, those goals aren't going to happen. And I think this is sort of what actually Kiprios touched on this in your interview the other day, was like the idea that Matthews and Marner are learning more and more what it takes to be successful. They're getting this, they're getting that. And that he liked that the Leafs didn't go too far all in on the playoffs, or that the deadline the mortgage the future. And what I think is missing from his point is the pressure and the expectation on Toronto by the media, the fans, the leadership, the management. There might not be a future for these guys if they don't prove something this year. You know what I'm saying? Like, I Kiprios didn't really seem to touch on that. And I think that's an argument that I would make with him is like, okay, we have this core for a long time locked up. I don't want to mortgage any of that. And just to go too far all in and first round picks, whatever. If you don't win a playoff series this year, how do you not make a move? How do you not ship off a Nylander or someone else to bring in a defenseman or to mix things up? I don't know. Is it? I don't know if this lead blowing thing is tied to their success in the playoffs. Is it a mental aspect of it? Is it that closing out game, closing out series, the between the years, like you and Kip said? I don't know, but it's got to be tied connected somehow.
Yeah, you can't blow this team up. This team is unblow upable. There's no one you can get rid of. And the guy you would want to get rid of, John Tavares, no one is going to take on his $11 million contract. You can't get rid of Matthews. You can't get rid of Marner. Those are like those players don't come along very often. You can't get rid of Nylander because he's signed to such a great contract for the next 3 years at $6.9 million. Like, you're not going to give him up when he plays so well and he's got such a good contract for you. So there's no getting around this team. Like, this is the team that you assembled. You need to do something with it. This could be another case. I know we just brought up Doug Wilson. This could be another case of the San Jose Sharks where it's a really good team, but there's just another team that's better. You know what? There's always got to be, you know, the bridesmaid, and you're never going to be the bride. This is the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think Kipper, when I was talking to him, he nailed it when, like, they don't have that Victor Hedman. They don't have that guy who just does everything on the back end, who's going to go out there and just be a huge different maker in the game. Morgan Riley's good. I don't think he is a game changer like the other elite defensemen in the league are. Like, Morgan Riley is a very reliable defenseman. I don't think he's a 1A plus type defenseman. And maybe the Leafs need that. Maybe the Leafs need to go out this offseason and see if Jacob Chychrun is that defenseman. I don't think he is, but they need that guy on the back end to just take control of a game. So going back to the point we were talking about, the Toronto Maple Leafs can't hold the lead. I think this is a huge problem. I don't know how to solve this problem. Usually a team, their first line is the lockdown line as well. They can go out, they calm things down, they can shut down the other team's first line. That's not Toronto. Marner's improved his defensive game, yes. But would you trust them if you're up by one with 2 minutes left in the game to throw your first line out? You go, okay, boys, you tap them on the shoulder. I want you to go shut this down. I want you to go get in the lane. Austin, I want you to win the draw. I want you to, you know, hound your centerman around the off defensive zone. Would you trust that first line to go and do that? Which line on Toronto is their shutdown line? Is it their second line with Tavares and Kerfoot and Mikheyev? Maybe that's the line. Is it Kampf and Engvall and Nylander? I don't see a line that you can just throw out there and completely blank another line and say, okay, eliminate this line. That's an issue. And we saw it even last night versus the Dallas Stars when literally – like, it was Sagan, Ben, Pavelski, Radulov, Klingberg, and Heiskanen, and they were dominating him. I mean, it's like, you got to be able to shut down a line when it, you know, comes down to brass tacks. I just don't think Toronto has that. It's not in their DNA.
So take me back, like, to your playing days, though. Say if your team had blown a couple of leads over the course of 2 weeks or something like that, what are the things that coaches are saying to correct that? How do you address that issue?
Well, it comes down to accountability. And you look to your top guys, you go, okay, like, we need to figure this out, especially, like, this is a pressing issue. Playoffs are around the corner. Playoffs are one goal games. This situation is going to come up very fast, and it's going to be for high stakes. If you lose the first, second, third game in the playoffs and you're at home, that's a big deal. So if I'm the coach talking to my team, I'm sitting down Matthews and Marner and Bunting, and I'm saying, listen, this is you, fellas. When we go up a goal, we're putting you out there. And this is going to be all on you. So you have to wrap your head around that and figure out how to do this, because you're the ones who got us here, and I'm going to ride you guys to the end. Good, you know, good, bad, or whatever. This is it. And I just leave it up to them, or whatever line you want to pick, whether it's Tavares, Mikheyev and Kerfoot, or if it's the Kampf line, whoever I want to put in that position. I am challenging them right now. I am taking that line aside, whether it's on the ice, after the ice, in my office. I'm saying, this is what we need you to do. We're not going to let this go on any further. We've had two massive blow-ups, breakdowns last week. We need to stop. Are you up to the challenge? I throw it in their face. I say, this is going to be you guys. I bring in the two defensemen. I bring in Riley, Labushkin, or Muzzin. Hopefully not Muzzin and Brody. I bring in whoever. And I say, this is it. We need you guys to step up. And if you can't do this, we're not going to win. We need you guys. We need you in this situation. And see if they rise to the occasion. And that's what I'm doing if I'm Sheldon Keefe right now. So we'll see if they can rise to the occasion if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs. Hopefully they can. I want them to do good. They're an exciting team to watch. I just don't know if they have it in them. I honestly don't know. Based on recent history, there's no way they do. So we'll see if they can change my mind. Prove me wrong.
Who's the team they think they're hoping to play in the first round?
Well, they're hoping to play the Bruins. Oddly enough, it's the Boston Bruins. Isn't that funny? It's like, pick your poison. Do you want to play the team that's beaten us recently or play the team that's beaten us a couple of years ago? Bruins or the Lightning. Those are the two teams you're going to get. So if I'm the Leafs, I want to play the Bruins, right? Like, you don't want to go up against the back-to-back champs. They're reloaded. They know how to win. They have our number. But then you look past them and it's like, oh my gosh, the Boston Bruins. Like, talk about like ghosts in the closet, bringing up the exes of, past. There's a no win situation here. It's got to be the Bruins though. Don't you think, Tim?
I think it has to be. Yeah. I mean, there's no easy win in the first round unless you get Washington, but they're not going to. And even them, I don't think it's as easy as we made it out to be. So there's no easy win. I think you do want to play the Bruins, one, to shake off those ghosts that have been haunting you the last few years and to prove that you guys can get over that hump. And two, I think it's probably the team they match up most well against. You don't want Tampa. You don't want Florida. It's got to be Boston. Not that it'll be easy, but I think I agree. That's what I want from them.
You know what's funny? The team I would want to match up most with in the East is the Carolina Hurricanes. For whatever reason, I just don't like the Hurricanes right now. I don't like them for years.
This is a long time.
I guess it is, but I like their team. They're a fun team to watch. They go out, they stir things up on social media, they mix it up with the offer sheets. They're a fun team. But if I'm a team in the East, like, I don't want to play Pittsburgh just because they have Crosby, they have Malkin, they have Letang. They just seem to always compete and they seem to always win for whatever reason. I don't want to play the Rangers just because Shishkin is a goaltender, and we'll touch on this in a couple minutes.
He is a goaltender, yes.
He is a goaltender who could steal a series. He really could. I don't think there's many goaltenders in the East that could do that. Maybe him and Vasilevsky. He could steal a series. That's how good he is. Florida is the best team in the East right now. They are so incredibly good. Toronto, I wouldn't want to play them. Boston, I wouldn't want to play them based on just who they have, the perfection line. Tampa Bay, for obvious reasons. And Washington, who knows what you're going to get. You can get the Carlson who's just Olaying all day, or you can get the team that won the Stanley Cup a few years back and they're just motivated and they want to win. So Carolina is the one team I would want to play. But if I'm Toronto, yes, I'm matching up versus Boston. Hopefully I can squeak past them. And then we're going to get into the meat potatoes of the playoffs and we're playing like legit Stanley Cup contenders. Cause I don't think Boston at this point is a Stanley Cup contender. Once you get past that first round in the East, those four teams, any one of them could have their names etched into the cup. And I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. So it's going to be a fun playoffs. It's coming down to the wire. We'll see where they ends up. Oddly enough, I think Toronto, yeah, they want to play Boston. And I think Tampa Bay probably, gosh, would they want to line up versus Carolina or Toronto? If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, who do you want to play? If I'm Tampa Bay, I want to play Carolina over Toronto. I'm dodging Toronto in the first round just because Toronto is such a good team this year. And I think Carolina has a lot more issues than Toronto does.
Yeah. Oh God. There's no easy answer, like we said. And I think I don't know. What I do know is that the way the playoffs are matching up right now is like kind of the dream scenario for the hockey fan, like Boston, Toronto in the first round. If these standings hold, you got New York and Pittsburgh. Those two teams hate each other. And that'll be a really fun one to watch. You got Carolina, Tampa Bay, another great, great series. And Florida, Washington. I think that's kind of a fun one too. Like this is it. It's coming together really, really nicely for us. A lot of storylines to talk about.
Yeah. No one's going to watch the games out West, which is going to be funny. So it's just going to be strictly focused on the East because it is the power balance in the NHL is totally shifted towards the East, and it is going to be a slugfest to see who comes out of the East. It's going to be absolutely epic to watch. I'm excited, but you know what else I'm excited for? I'm going to get my dinner at DoorDash tonight. It's Friday during Lent. I can't eat meat. All Catholics, you know what I'm talking about. So I'm going to order myself up some nice fish, Tim, maybe some fried cod, maybe some fish and chips. It's going to be beautiful. I'm going to get it from a local Scallywags here in Traverse City. Shout out to them. It's a beautiful dish. I'm excited to get it. And I'm excited because I'm going to use DoorDash. I'm going to use my promo code. I'm going to get 25% off. I'm going to get free delivery. It's going to be fantastic. All I use, my promo code here in the States is GlovedDDUS. If you're in Canada, the promo code is GlovesDD. Check it out. It's an amazing company. I use them. Tim uses them. Millions of people around the world use them. They're a world-class company, so check it out. Use promo code GlovesDDUS if you're in the US of A, and promo code GlovesDD if you're in Canada. DoorDash, use it on your phone, your app, your computer, your iPad. There's so many different ways to use DoorDash. Check it out. Tell them we sent you. You mentioned the New York Rangers and the Pittsburgh Penguins, Tim. They had a playoff preview last night, and it did not disappoint. It was probably one of the most intense games I've ever watched this year. I don't want to say ever, but it was a very hard-fought game. It went back and forth. The things I took out of that game, did you watch it by any chance? Did you catch any of it while you were traveling in the airport?
No. Tell me about it. Catch me up.
It was a heck of a game. It was in Madison Square Garden. That place just has a vibe to it. When it's going, it just has a guttural feeling in the garden when you're playing and it's a playoff game or a playoff atmosphere and you're playing a good team, the crowd's into it. You can feel it. It's I don't want to say manly because I don't know what that means, but it just feels like, oh, there's some aggression, pent up aggression in the building. And it's a New York vibe. You get it when you walk around the streets. If you ever get a chance to walk around New York, you feel different. You're almost on edge a little bit. Like something might happen, good or bad. That's the vibe you get when you play the Madison Square Garden. It's just very intimate, enclosed. You can't see the fans because it's so dark. The ice rink's just lit right up. It's a cool feeling. No one knows this, but Madison Square Garden, it's like, how do you explain it? To get to the rink, you have to climb up a huge rink. So the ice level sits like 30 feet above street level. So to get to the rink, if you're a fan, you got to walk up all these stairs, and it's just like, almost like you're going into the Coliseum. Then you look down and there's the rink. And it's the same for the players. You got to walk up this massive long ramp and you get to the rink. And it's a different vibe in New York. But anyways, they had a playoff atmosphere type game, which they haven't had in a long time in New York. It's been a few years since they've had this atmosphere. They welcome the Pittsburgh Penguins in. Obviously all that they bring with it, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, all the boys, the rings, everything, all the mojo that they bring with them. And it was a heck of a game. The things that I took away from it's already beleaguer the point. Shesterkin is the real deal. He was so incredibly good. He was not out of position at all. He's very confident. He plays at the top of his crease. He tracks the puck well. For not being a big body, he covers up the net so incredibly well. The Penguins had very, very good chances, grade A chances. I'm talking Gensel in the slot. I'm talking backdoors. I'm talking two-on-ones. I'm talking breakaways. Shesterkin made every save look easy. He's stretching across. He's in position. No bad rebounds. He controlled this claim from start to finish. And Tristan Jarry played well, too. He gave up two goals. Yes, it was a very good game by the goaltenders. I'm excited to see this matchup just because those two guys, if they continue this play in the playoffs, it's going to be very exciting to watch. The issues for me, the Rangers, their defense could be an issue. They really could. Adam Fox, you look good. He's as advertised. He made a few slick moves, rang one off the post. That could be the Achilles heel for the New York Rangers. Their offense looks strong. The addition of Kopp, he's been playing with Panarin. They had unbelievable chemistry. Panarin had a goal. It was a 3-on-2. He was the trailer. He takes a nice pass on his forehand, takes it to his backhand, rips an absolute laser backhand top left. It was an unbelievable goal. Steals the game. It was 2-0 with that goal. It was a fantastic goal. Pittsburgh pushed back per se, but Shesterkin was just really, really good. The Penguins, as well for them, their Achilles heel could be their back end, their defense. Neither of these teams, I think, has as good a defense as Tampa Bay Lightning, as the Carolina Hurricanes. So that could be the issues for them. But boy, what a game. This is going to be a fun first round. It'll be a really fun first round. And I haven't watched much of Shesterkin. I've watched a little bit. That was an incredible game he just played on the biggest stage. It was a really, really good game by him.
You know what I like most about him? It's not just the talent, which obviously he has, but there are other guys that are like crazy talented too. He's got an edge. He's got an attitude. That you see after the game where he's like waving the Penguins goodbye as they skated off.
Yeah,
like that's the kind of thing that translates into playoff success. Like you got to have that edge and you got to be able to eat those big moments. And he like welcomes it. It looks like, so that's really cool.
Well, you could tell it was a playoff game because after the game, there's a scrum, there's face washing, there's just some animosity there. The Penguins are like, we're going to lose this game. Guess what? We're going to just punch everybody in the face at the end of this game. And that's what they did. It was fantastic. I loved it. I loved the aggression. I love the in-your-face mentality at the end of the game, not giving an inch, even though you know your game's over. You know, it was 3-0. They gave up an empty netter, and they came out, and they finished every check. It was fantastic. I loved it. I want to see more of it. It was a good way to finish their matchup because they don't play the rest of the regular season until the playoffs. Very, very exciting, Tim. Like it gets my juices flowing thinking about stuff like that. You know what else got my juices flowing? My Hoss man, Marian Hossa. I didn't even realize this was happening. Then I saw it. He's got his jersey raised to the rafters. Very quietly, a ceremony done in Chicago last night. Did you expect Hoss to get his name raised to the rafters? He went to the Hall of Fame this year, first ballot Hall of Famer. Does he warrant his jersey in the rafters for Chicago? He wasn't there a long time, 8 seasons, just over 500 games. While he was there, though, he did make an impact. 3 cups, countless individual awards, maybe not countless, but individual awards, really turned that team into a cup contender. I know we've talked to Dave Bolin and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews on the show, all friends of the show. They said when they went out and got Marian Hossa, that was the move that Stan Bowman made that was like, okay, this is real. We're going to win the Stanley Cup because he had just finished beating them in Game 7, or I don't know how it worked out. He had just lost again in Game 7 with Detroit. He goes to Chicago and they're like, that was the last piece to the puzzle. And once those guys saw him in their locker room, like, dang, we got, this is it. This is our team. We're going to win Stanley Cups. And it was Marian Hossa. What do you think? Is he a jersey in the rafters type guy though? That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. I actually didn't realize he was there for that long. In my mind, he was like 4 to 5 years. 8 years is a long time. And obviously, he won 3 cups there. And like you said, he was maybe not the most talented or the most important part of those teams, but he was nails in the big moment. And he was an absolute missing piece from that roster. Crazy, crazy good. And yeah, it's not just the points you put up, which you put up plenty of them, but it's like how important you are to that team. And he was just like, he was the guy for so much of that stretch. And did he win a Conn Smythe? He didn't, did he?
He won an Art Ross. He won he did not win the Conn Smythe. No, he didn't win any individual trophies other than an Art Ross. That's funny.
Well, and this, you didn't hesitate last time I asked you, the most underrated player you ever played with was him, even though he was like an all-star MVP. Now he's in the Hall of Fame. Still, people don't appreciate how good he was.
Yeah, he was absolutely, I say, the best player on that Chicago Blackhawks team when I was there. And I say it, I've said it to Kaner, I've said it to Toews, I said it to everybody I run across. Hossa did absolutely everything. He did it at high speed. He did it just, he was such a good hockey player. He never took a shift off. He was so hard to play against. He had his wingspan with his stick length. It was so hard to check him as a defenseman. I remember playing against him and he would just bait you. He would hold the puck out on his left side and you would go to poke for it. Cause you're like, I got this. And he would just suck it all the way back and he would put on his backhand. And I know I have a long wingspan. He would cover 10 feet of ice, 15 feet of ice doing that move. And he's going full speed. And it's like, you can't catch up to him. He was such a strong player. He played for 20 years. Like, people forget about him in Ottawa. He was an absolute juggernaut in Ottawa, and he goes to Atlanta, lights it up in Atlanta, then he ends up in Chicago, and it's just like, dang. And then he had his stops in Pittsburgh and Detroit to do those Game 7 losses, just heartbreaking, and then he manages to kind of win the Stanley Cup in Chicago 3 times in 8 years. So, gosh, what a career he had. Epic hockey player. Even nicer guy off the ice, so good for him. Very happy to see Haas get the recognition. And then, you know, on another note, he was the only guy to wear number 81 in Chicago. And I don't think players are knocking down the door to get number 81. So it was kind of an easy thing. They go, oh yeah, Hoss, we're going to put your name in the rafters. It's not like saying we're going to put number 14 or number whatever in the rafters.
Number five
or whatever. They're like, yeah, 14 or 81. Yeah. That we can do that. You know, no one's going to ever want to wear that number again. And it got me thinking, what other guys are going to have their numbers raised to the rafters in the NHL right now? Obviously, there's the no-brainers. Ovechkin's going to get his raised. You know, one of them, like Getzlaff, we'll touch on him. He just retired. He's going to get his number raised to the rafters in Anaheim. What other guys, Tim, that you can think of right now are locked in for rafters raising when their career's over. Like guys still in their career. What do you think? You got anybody on the Rolodex that you can think of offhand?
Bergeron.
You think Bergeron goes to the Bruins rafters?
No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Marchand possibly too.
Is that right?
Bergeron. Yes. Yeah. He's been rafters. That's been his nickname in Boston for a few years. Like since when I lived there 5-6 years ago was rafters. He would score an overtime goal and everyone would tweet rafters. So yeah.
No way. That's the coolest nickname I've ever heard.
Yes.
That's like so cool. You think Marchand too? Do you know who was in the rafters in Boston right now? Obviously Bobby Orr, probably Esposito. Johnny Busick,
Neely,
Ray Bourque.
I don't know some of the older guys, like I don't think Sanderson's there. I don't know. They probably got like eight or so in the rafters.
So not many considering their history. They were an original six team. When I was in Montreal, when I played so many games there, it's hard to count. When I played my one game there, you look around the top of the rink, every number from 1 to 20 is up in the rafters just because back in the old days, they didn't give out numbers like they did nowadays where you can pick any number under 99. So every number is up in the rafters for the Montreal Canadiens. So it's surprising that the Bruins don't have more. Maybe they weren't as successful as the Canadiens. I know they had their run. They won a cup after 11. Cup after cup. They have 11. The Bruins do.
Yep. Yep.
And you're saying Marchand and Bergeron are going to be in that category, even though any Stanley Cups those guys have?
One. Bergeron is a lock. He's a lock. That's not even
any like personal awards.
Bergeron. Yeah. He's got the most Selkies of all time.
Is that actually an award though? Like, do you want to be the guy who's won a Selke?
Yes. What? Yes.
That's not an award I want to win every single year. Award.
No. Selke's defensive player.
That's another lame one.
You're thinking Lady Bing.
They're both crappy awards.
Oh, stop.
I'm kidding.
Who else could be up there?
Well, just staying in Chicago, because you give it to Hosted, you got to give it to Kane, Taves, Seabrook, you know, Keith, Sharp. Like, what is Sharpie thinking? He's at home right now. He's like, gosh, I had more points in Chicago than Hosted. Why am I not in the rafters?
He was there for all those cups, too.
He was there for all the cups. You know, Brian Campbell, Dave Bolin, Jalmerson, they've all played their part in their cups. Who do you give in that? Just staying in Chicago, does Sharp go in the rafters? Answer it, Tim. No. Does Sharp go in the rafters? Taves, no. Kane?
Yes, yes.
Keith?
Yes.
Seabrook?
No.
Bolin, Chalmerson, Campbell?
No.
All right. I'm just saying, like, Haas was a big part of those cups, arguably the biggest part. But when you had the same cast of characters for all three cups, it's like, what?
Yeah.
Where does it end? Like, where does it end? I agree with you with Duncan. I'm on the fence with Johnny. And I'm on the fence with, well, Patty, I do. I'm on the fence with Johnny. I am. I don't know why. Like, who knows? What about a Matthews and a Marner? Do they need to win a cup to get up in the rafters of Toronto?
Well, I don't know. It was interesting to hear Kiprio say that they're probably the most popular Maple Leafs players of all time already. And maybe the most talented too. And I guess I didn't realize that. I didn't really think about it, but yeah, like they're definitely up there already. And they're so young still.
Well, let's just talk about the feat that Matthews just had. He just scored his 55th goal, most ever for the Leafs in a single season, which, if I might say, seems a little low for the Toronto Maple Leafs. When you look at their vast history, their original six, they've had some heck of a good hockey players over that time frame. But when you think about it, yeah, they really haven't had that like an elite goal scorer for the last 50 years. Like, I know Ricky Vive. I know him personally. He's a great guy. When he told me he was the all-time leading scorer for the Toronto Maple Leafs and he's the last guy to score 50 goals, and that was back who knows when, I was like, Ricky, that's insane. Like, that's absolutely insane. The Leafs have been just a definition of futility for that long where they haven't had like an unbelievable goal scorer. And you can go down the list of the players who have hit 50 goals since then, and it's crazy that there hasn't been a Leafs player to do that. So this is a big deal for Austin Matthews. This is a big deal for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think people are downplaying it just because that's what they expect for Austin Matthews, but the Leafs have been a team for over 100 years. And this young kid just set a new record for goals for that team. So very, very cool. Very, very neat. I think, you know, he will get his rafters raised, but if he doesn't win a cup. Okay, go ahead.
I want to ask a couple more players about whether they get their jerseys raised. Okay. Anze Kopitar.
Yeah, just because LA is a younger team. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, two cups too.
Yep. Well, some would say three cups.
Why?
Because he's won three cups.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't.
LA's won three.
They won two.
Three.
No, 12 and 14, I think.
No, they won the odd years.
No, Chicago won the odd years. Or 10, 13, 15.
All right, hold on. Let me see. All right, keep going on that.
Backstrom. Nicholas
they have one too. Excuse me, you're right. I thought they won three. I'm such an idiot. Maybe I was thinking about Backstrom, you say? For who?
Yeah, Chicago, Washington.
No.
Nicholas. Stamkos.
Yeah.
Giroux.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I think that's really it, unless you get to, until you get to the younger players who like McDavid, Matthews, whatever.
What about a Getzlaff and a Perry?
Getzlaff, Perry, no. Perry, no. Getzlaff, yes. I'll say yes.
How do you not have those two in the same category? Just because Perry wasn't re-signed by them the last 2 years? I don't understand how you can.
I don't know. Captain, they're longer. Yeah, I don't know. It's close. Like Jamie Benn?
No, not yet. He hasn't done enough. Like, yes, you're the captain. Yes, you've been there a long time. You haven't done enough. You got to win. You got to win a Stanley Cup. It all comes down to the cup. All right, let's just finish up here. Let's do some quick hits. It's really, really, really sad news for you, Tim. This one hit you hard. Jack Hughes done for the season. You okay? How are you feeling?
I'm okay now. It's been about a week since this news was dropped, but I wasn't okay when I saw it. And not only because my fantasy hockey is in the playoffs right now, he's a big part of my team. This is a bummer, but again, it doesn't really matter. He'll be back healthy. It's not too serious. It's just the timing of it. They were like, let's not rush him back. There's no point. The season's over for them. So I think let's come back to this in the fall. I think he's going to get 10 points in his first three games.
You're already predicting for next year, the first three games.
I'll
take that bet right now.
Okay.
You can bet me whatever you want. I'll take it. That's a lot of points.
I know
that's a lot of points.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yep.
Speaking of a lot of points, Roman Josi just set a new record for the Nashville Predators. Most points of all time for that franchise. 86 points as a defenseman. All these guys who are in the MVP category, they keep doing incredible things. It's going to be such a hard award to give out because these guys are doing historic things. Auston Matthews just set a record for a team that's been in the league since the inception of the NHL. Ilya Shesterkin could be the best goaltender we've ever seen in a single season. Roman Josi just set a franchise record for points for defensemen, and he's putting up numbers that we haven't seen from a defenseman in, let's say, 30 years. Back when points were just – people were throwing out points left and right.
There's 11 games left. There's 11 games.
If he gets to 100 points, 102, 103, he will be in the top 10 all time for a single season by defensemen. You know who occupies those top 10 spots? Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey. That's it.
Yeah.
They're just those two guys. Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey. They go 5-5. Or no, does Bobby have 6? Bobby has 5. Coffey has 5. That's it. So the fact that Roman Josi is in this conversation, playing on a team that isn't known as a high-scoring team, he's got 86 points. If he somehow cobbles together, if he keeps this pace over points per game, maybe gets 15 points by the end of the year and gets 101, 102 points, he deserves the MVP. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The one thing in common with all these defensemen on the most points in a season by a defenseman, the years they played. Bobby Orr, he was 70 to 80. Paul Coffey, he was in the same time frame, little maybe later 80s. Brian Leetch was the early 90s. There's Dennis Poppin, Phil Housley, Ray Bourque's mixed in there. All of these guys played in the time frame when it was just go, go, go. The defenses weren't that good. The goaltenders were still trying to figure things out. They weren't big and athletic like they are now. You have to go down the list all the way to the 41st team, when 41st position for a defenseman in this era to jump on the list. And it's Brent Burns in 2018 and 19, when he gets 83 points in 82 games and he wins the Norris. Brent Burns that season played like a forward. He was up and down the ice. He was all over the place. He didn't play like your prototypical defenseman. In the top 50, there's only two guys from the 2000s era. Two. Erik Karlsson's the other one. He's sitting at 49. Roman Yossi is going to be the top 10 of all time if he continues his pace. If he doesn't win the MVP, I don't know. I don't know what to think. It's unbelievable the seasons he's having. Everyone's focused on Makar. Everyone's focused on Matthews. Everyone's focused on Shishkin. Gosh, Roman Yossi's having a good season. Maybe because he plays for Nashville. Who knows why, but he is. This is the best season we've seen from a defenseman in a long time. And if he hits three digits, he's got MVP wrapped up, don't you think?
Yeah, and by the way, he's like a lockdown, shutdown defenseman too. Like he's not putting up these points at the expense of playing his position like some other guys we've mentioned. Like he is among the best of the best in the league at the defensive side of the ice too. So this is – I saw someone talking about it. I remember where, but the cool thing with him, like on the breakout, for example, he's one of the defensemen that doesn't look to like make that breakout pass. He carries the puck out himself, and he's passing to the guy at the far blue line once he hits the blue line or something. Like he's not making the easy pass. He wants the puck on a stick. And he puts up points and still shuts down the top line every night. So yeah, just the best of the best right now.
Man, Nashville knew what they were doing when they got rid of Subban and Weber. They're like, yeah, no, we got someone. They got rid of Ellis. No, we got someone else. We're good. You guys didn't have, like
Suter.
No, Suter. Yeah. They know how to get defensemen. I tell you what, like whoever's scouting for their back end, give that guy a raise. He's doing a good
job.
They
drafted Seth Jones too, by the way. Remember that?
Yeah. I don't, but yeah, I believe it. All right. Well, let's do your points bet, Tim, and get out of here.
Yeah, this is a different one now. I'm going with an over-under here just because I don't really love the game tonight. They're really close.
Bruins Lightning?
No, I like that game. I don't want to bet on it, though. I'm going to be watching it.
Okay.
Yes, the game I want to bet on is the Canadiens and Maple Leafs. They're playing each other in Toronto. I think it's going to be closer. I don't think it's going to be a closer game, but I'm picking the over on that one. And it's set at 6.5. I still think it's going to go over. That's my pick for the night.
All right, you love the over-under. I'm just going straight up. I've been on a hot streak lately. Like, if you're betting with me, you're winning money. Maybe some nights not a lot, maybe other nights a lot. I haven't lost in a long time, so bear with me. Ride this wave, baby. Bruins Lightning. I'm taking the Bruins. I like the Bruins.
Pasternak and Lindholm are both out tonight.
I like the Lightning. I'm taking the Lightning. I like the Lightning. I've always liked the Lightning. Take the Lightning. Press the Lightning button as hard as you can. We're taking the Lightning over the Bruins. We're taking the Panthers, as much as I like the Sabres, we're taking the Panthers over the Sabres. The Panthers are just so incredibly strong. I'm taking the Islanders over the Hurricane. I like the Islanders. They've been playing well lately. They got me a big upset win the other night when I picked them over the New York Rangers, and I'm sticking with them. Islanders have been playing really, really good hockey the last month. Too little, too late, rightfully so, but I'm taking the Islanders over the Hurricanes. A big matchup, playoff matchup, Wild Blues. This is going to be a good matchup. I'm going to take the Wild. They're too strong. We're going to see Marc-Andre Fleury in net, I would imagine. And we're going to see the Wild just continue their winning ways. And then we got the Avalanche and the Jets. I'm going to take the Avalanche and hammer all those picks. I'm going to win at least 3 of the 5, maybe 4 of the 5. You're going to win some money. Thank you to PointsBet, who is now in Ontario. Good for PointsBet. We're opening up in Ontario. Very exciting stuff. So, yeah, check it out, PointsBet. Check out Dropping the Gloves. Drop us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to these podcasts. And have yourself a good weekend, everybody. We will be back with you next week. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.